Hey, Prime members, you can listen to The Vanished ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
It's a hole in your whole family. You know, I mean, there's always this blank. Every event in your family, whether it's someone dying or a baby being born or anything, you know, strikes you even harder. So every event, whether it's happy or sad, almost as sad, you know. Because it brings it back full force that there's this big missing piece. You know, and in my case, it's my daughter and my granddaughter, so.
Hello, and welcome to episode 60 of The Vanished. 21-year-old Jennifer Wicks and her 2-year-old daughter Adriana disappeared from Cross Plains, Tennessee on March 25, 2004. According to Jennifer's boyfriend, he dropped them off at a gas station where they got into a white car. The next day, he claims that Jennifer came back to the house to ask for her income tax return and then left. The two have never been seen or heard from again. This is Jennifer and Adriana's story. At the time of Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance, they had been living with Jennifer's boyfriend, Joey Benton, and his parents at their home in rural Robertson County, Tennessee. Jennifer had started dating Joey less than a year earlier in July of 2003. Their relationship was far from perfect. I spoke to Kathy, who was Jennifer's mom and Adriana's grandmother. She gave me some insight into the relationship between Jennifer and Joey, and also an incident that happened in September of 2003 that prompted Jennifer to move out of the Benton home.
They seemed to have a love-hate thing going on. Like I said, they hadn't been together that long, and they had already had an encounter to where he had pulled a gun on her. And so she left him then, and as a matter of fact, I moved home. I had transferred out to Las Vegas, Nevada, working, and I transferred back home just to come back and help her and the baby because she was distraught and didn't want to live at her grandmother's house and didn't have a job at the moment and all this. So I took a leave and moved back here to help her out.
Unfortunately, Jennifer did eventually move back in with Joey and his family. On the evening of Wednesday, March 24th, Jennifer called and spoke to Kathy. She described that phone call to me.
Nothing was normal. She was very concerned. She was very upset. There was a lot of discourse and fighting and cussing and screaming and yelling and calling names and all this kind of stuff going on in the house when she called me.
The following day, Jennifer spoke with both her aunt and her father on the phone. While speaking with them, she had told them about her concerns with her current living situation at the Benton house. Those phone calls are the last confirmed contact that anyone had with Jennifer or Adriana. But the story doesn't end there. Jennifer was a young mom and didn't have much money, a cell phone, or a car. Joey has told a few different stories about how Jennifer and Adriana left on March 25th. The one that has seemed to stick is that the two had an argument on Thursday evening, which would be the day after the argument that Kathy heard over the phone. Jennifer asked Joey to take her to a local gas station. He said that Jennifer and Adriana exited his vehicle and she asked him to leave. He then pulled across the street and waited for several minutes until a white four-door car pulled up and the two got in the back seat. He also said that the next day, Jennifer came back to his house driving the white car that she had gotten into the night before, and she asked for her income tax return. Jennifer didn't have a bank account, so she had her tax return directly deposited into Joey's parents' bank account. He said that his parents weren't home, so she left without her money, but said she would come back for it. This is when Jennifer was last seen, at least according to Joey. Kathy is the one who reported Jennifer and Adriana missing. She explained to me those initial days when she started to worry that something could be wrong.
Well, like I said, I talked to her on Wednesday night and all this fighting and stuff was going on. And then on Thursday, I didn't hear anything from her. But she might go a day or two and not call. And so I'm assuming that the spat's over and, you know, there's just no need for her to call me. And so it was Friday. I was at work, and I just had her on my mind strong. So as soon as I got home from work, I started looking, you know, I called Joey's cell phone. He wouldn't answer. He didn't answer me. And so I called her grandmother's. Had they heard from her? Nobody heard from her. Called my sister. Have you heard from her? Nobody's heard from her. So then I told her grandmother Wicks, who she was extremely close to and talked to every day. If she didn't talk to me, she talked to Granny Wicks. And I had called her. Well, a couple hours later, I'm laying down going to sleep, you know, not thinking my kid's been murdered or disappeared or run away or anything. I lay down to go to sleep, and her grandmother calls me back and tells me something's wrong. And I said, what do you mean something's wrong? She said, Jennifer's missing. And I said, missing? She said, nobody can find her anywhere, Kathy. And so, of course, I jump up, get my clothes on, start looking for her. Went to girlfriend's house and friend's house, you know, all this at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Me and my middle daughter did. Joey finally called us and said that, you know, that's when he started telling his story. Anyways, I didn't believe him. There was just something, I didn't like him. He had already pulled a gun on my kids. I'd already had to move across the country because of him. He wasn't allowed at my house. He had kicked my door in before. I'd had him arrested. You know, I'd seen him when he was so messed up on drugs, out of his mind. I couldn't convince my daughter to stay away from him and to get away from him. He was putting me in a situation where I felt like I needed to do something about my daughter and my granddaughter. You know, she's two, and here she is in a place that she has no business being, with guns and drugs and stuff around her. And I just didn't believe him. Not from Jump Street, I didn't believe him. But so by now we're all the families gathered pretty much. Slowly, you know, everybody's showing up at my house because nobody can find her. And we waited it out until, well, he actually ended up, his father, I think, him and his father ended up coming to my sister's house because my sister's son was this boy's best friend. That's how my daughter met him, my nephew. And so they came over to my sister's house and acted like they were looking for her. You know, like they were out looking for her. My sister told them that night, you better hope nothing's happened to her. Joey supposedly, I guess, told my sister that night that they had got into this white car and that they had gotten the back seat. So he assumed where, you know, that she had gone over to these people's house. You know, he told this four-door white car. And so we waited until up in the day, the next day on Saturday, because those people weren't at home and we couldn't ask them. They had gone out of town to a race. And so when they got back home, we asked them, have you talked to Jennifer or seen Jennifer or anything? And the girl, who was Jennifer's girlfriend, you know, she said, no. She said, I haven't talked to Jennifer in forever. She's like, something's wrong. I called the police and reported her missing.
All of Jennifer and Adriana's belongings were left behind at the Benton home, except for a few things. Adriana's car seat and her diaper bag were both missing, along with Jennifer's wallet and her eyeglasses. I tried to get in touch with law enforcement to ask them some questions about Jennifer and Adriana's case. I asked if someone would be willing to speak with me, and this is the response that I got.
No, ma'am. It's still open investigation. Thank you.
If you go online and do some research on this case, you'll see that in news articles, often they reference four searches that were conducted at the Benton home. This may lead you to believe that their property was thoroughly searched on multiple occasions, but Kathy told me the whole story on that.
They haven't searched that property four times. They just have not. That's what, and if you'd gotten a statement from them and you had asked them about that, they would have been sure to tell you
how thoroughly that they have searched that property. But that's just not the case. And the reason that I know that is because, you know, I've been present most of the time and seen how long they were there and talked to people who helped in the search and who told me certain places they didn't get to look, that they weren't allowed to even go on. See, they've never done it with a warrant.
This means that they have only been able to search the property with permission. And with permission, that doesn't mean that you could just look anywhere. They were only allowed to search in specific areas that the family approved.
So the very first time that they supposedly searched was, I don't know, a week or two after Jennifer disappeared. They brought a tracking dog or something out there and run him around the house. And he didn't go anywhere and nothing come of that, you know. That was the end of that search. The night I reported him missing, they didn't even do a walkthrough. They done a welfare check by knocking on the door. Joey just told him, you know, she won't be back here. He was actually on the local news saying that at the door. And that was what he said to the news, is she won't be back here. So anyways, then that was one search, if you can call it that. The next search was one that they were going to do, and they searched about, now these people have access to hundreds of acres, okay? But their land is an acre, okay? But right here's Uncle Rick and Aunt Carol, and over there's my cousin Jackie, and over there's Uncle John and Aunt Betty, and down there's our grandparents, and they got woods, trails through the woods to hook up to different, you know, the different houses and stuff. So, yeah, so we're talking about a lot of property. But then the second one, they brought dogs again, and they allowed these people to stand over and play with these cadaver dogs, supposedly searched cadaver dogs. Joey's family stood over there and played fetch with them for a little while. I was across the street watching them. I'm thinking, that's just not the way this is done, you know? Believe me, I said something about that too. But anyways, one of the local news stations showed up. Somebody in the community must have called him, and they showed up. And they went to his door, asked his daddy, you know, what's going on, blah, 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 you know, asked him to make a statement to him. And it made him so mad that he stopped the search. Get off my property, all of you, get off. So he sent him packing. That was search two. Let's see. Search three was a better search. They did drain a pond on the property. Maybe they had a tip or something about the pond. They drained the pond. They brought in a professor up in UT Knoxville at the Body Farm. They brought him, his crew, in with ground penetrating radar equipment. But I have a letter from that department at UT that says it was a total waste of time because there was too much property that they weren't allowed to search. So that's search number three. Search number four, they did not participate in. I put it together with the Cloth Kids Foundation and the Laura Recovery Center. And I funded it, and I got the National Guard to let us use their place in town and put these folks up for the weekend and their dogs, you know. I had done that, but the Bentons would not allow us on their property. Only thing that got searched was surrounding property that weekend. But that's the truth of the matter, you know. I sit there and count them all off to you. That's the way it's went over the 13 years. And other than that, there's been no other searches. And I've always, you know, for 13 years, I've been on them about getting a warrant, you know, a search warrant. You know, they tell me they don't have probable cause for a search warrant so that they can't get one. And that besides, they've searched most of that property anyway.
You heard earlier about Jennifer's income tax refund being deposited into Joey's parents' bank account. Well, Kathy told me about a conversation that she had with his parents just days after Jennifer and Adriana disappeared.
When she'd been gone about, I don't know, 4 or 5 days, I said, I want Jennifer's income tax.
Because at this point, okay, they're broke up in the very least, right? You know, you owe me my daughter's money when you drug out it, son's not spending, you know. So, you know, I said, so give it up. And he tells his wife to write me a check. She looked up and said, who should I write the check to? His wife did. And I thought that a strange question. I looked at her right in the face and I said, Jennifer Wicks. You know, I thought it was just a weird question for her to ask. I've just put that check in my wallet, thinking my girl gonna be back. Even though she ain't never done nothing like this before, you know, gotta hope she's gonna be back. The thing gonna be okay. I'm holding on to it. Well, one day I was in town in Springfield and I went in the bank and decided that I would just deposit it in an account for her, a savings account. So I went in there to do that and they told me that the check was canceled. All these years, the lowlife even kept her last $500.
Remember earlier, I mentioned that Joey had several stories about the car that Jennifer and Adriana supposedly got into at the gas station? He initially said that it was a four-door Mustang, but no such car exists, and Joey happened to be a Mustang enthusiast, who owned two himself. Kathy told me how this mistruth played out in a truly odd way.
When he told all these lies about what kind of car it was she got in, four-door Mustang, four-door Camaro, you know, all this. And they had to call him on that. He'd done that on purpose, I found out. That was another one of their trickeries. I told you how tricky these people are and how slick they and all the vicious stuff they've done. They started right out that night doing it. I figured them out. He told that police officer that night, knowing that there was no such thing as a four-door Mustang or a four-door Camaro. He knew that he knew it, and he knew the cop knew that he knew it. But he said that then he and his father, that came out in the newspaper because it was in the police report. So that came out in the newspaper the following week. And he and his father went to the police station and raised Mighty Kane and said that they were trying to entrap him and that they had proof of it in that police report, that his son never said a four-door Mustang because he was a Mustang advocate and knew that there was no such thing, that he owned two Mustangs. Well, guess what? Guess what the sheriff done? Changed the report and fired the cop. I went to the cop's post-hearing when they were trying to decommission him and testified against the sheriff and for the cop. I sure did. I mean, I asked the sheriff, I said, how could you do this to my kid's investigation, first off? You know, I said, you just got him out of whatever. If you're going to say that what he says, you know, that what your police officer wrote is false, and you're going to, you know, you just screwed this whole thing up, you know? How could you do that? I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It blew my mind, Marissa. I said, why would you take his word over your police officer? What are you trying to do to my girl's case? And he said, that police officer with his lies would mess up this case. I thought that kind of behavior before they would even say my girl might be missing for almost 2 years. For 2 years, all they ever said was, she's 21. She can be anywhere she wants to be. She'll be back. She's probably just mad. I heard a rumor she's running from you. You know, that's the way they talked to me. And I'm like, if my daughter was going to run from me, and if me and her weren't on speaking terms, then why is it that I can hand you my phone bill right here, right now? Because it was a cell phone that I was talking on. She was talking on their landline. I said, how can I hand you my phone bill right now? And I had it in my hand. She called me and we talked for an hour the night before she disappeared. Now, if we weren't speaking and she didn't like me and she was running from me, why would she call me and talk to me for an hour? Why? You know, I mean, it was just, they just didn't, I don't know. They pushed back so hard on me. It was unbelievable. So I would really like to see the law enforcement have to treat missing persons cases as a crime until they have proven otherwise.
I thought this whole scenario was really bizarre. I'm not sure why they would side with a potential person of interest over their own officer in a case like this. I'm interested to hear what you guys think about it. I know a lot of listeners like to go research these cases after hearing the show. One thing you'll find if you look into this case is that there's a lot of talk about it on the local Topics forum. If you don't know what Topics is, it's a website that will have local news articles and also a forum for people to not only talk about the articles, but you can also post your own discussions. The level of talk about this case on the local Topics forum, I would say it's more than any other case that I've looked at. There's a lot of rumors and what appears to be people attempting to steer the investigation in other directions. They said things like Jennifer ran off to another state, or that she was running away from her family. And you've heard Kathy mention that she really had to fight that rumor because the police seemed to believe it, for the first couple of years anyway. You could spend a lot of time reading through all the threads on Topics, and Kathy told me that hundreds of pages of it have already been deleted. One thing that bothered me while reading it is that much of it appears to be a smear campaign against Jennifer, when she isn't even here to defend herself. I've read through it, and honestly, I think a good bit of what's been written seems to be an attempt to harass Jennifer and Adriana's family, and you can see that it put the family on the defensive, not only defending themselves, but also Jennifer. I'll let you guys read it and make up your own minds about who you think would have a reason to spend so much time over all these years antagonizing a family who has lost not just one person, but two. This is Kathy's take on all the talk on Topics.
Those people can't sit there and tell me that they cared anything about Jennifer and Adriana and that they're not guilty of something and then get on the computer and smear her to the world. I just don't see that, you know. I mean, something's not, you know, that right there just screams guilt to me of something, you know.
There's another incident that Kathy told me about that appears to be yet another attempt to intimidate Jennifer and Adriana's family, and also their supporters.
Oh, yeah, they've been doing it for years. They've done some horrible things, Marissa. I mean, it's been highly unusual and so blatant, like just blatant guilt. Because, I mean, they fired guns at a vigil.
If you just yelled out loud when you heard that, don't worry, I did too.
Yes, yes, ma'am. They sure have. I mean, they've done some whacked out stuff over the years. I mean, the way they bashed Jennifer on there, but they, oh gosh, yes, the same day they fired guns at that same vigil, right beside where Jennifer disappeared from, where she lived, there's a chain link fence that divides that yard and a cemetery. Well, the cemetery, of course, doesn't belong to them, belongs to the church up the road. So it's kind of public ground, you know. I mean, it belongs to the church, but, you know, the church don't care if people come to the cemetery, you know. So that's where we would hold a balloon release for the girls. We'd park at the church, walk down to the cemetery, release the balloons, doves. Anyways, they fired guns into the ground. Well, I had about 75 people there. Some of them even, I had a couple of retired law enforcement there, but they weren't local law enforcement. They were Metro Nashville that were there and witnessed all this. They fired guns into the ground. They called the cops. The cops come, pull in their driveway and take a report from them, leave, and never even come over to make sure everyone's okay. I've got 80-year-old people to infant babies at a balloon release. Never even come over there to see if everybody's okay. Took a report from them and left. Oh, it turns out that they called the cops and reported that an angry mob of people were over in the cemetery and shots had been fired at them. Then it was the anniversary of the girl's disappearance. So I expected that the local newspaper would put something in there about the girls. Well, they made the front page, but the front page was a picture of three headstones in the cemetery that were desecrated with spray paint. Our shirts that year said Justice for Jen. So they painted that on the back on three tombstones. And I found out about it. They called the police and filed another report that after we had left, they found it like that.
and the newspaper put it on the front page of that instead of my girls' faces from their hometown, instead of their faces on the front page, it was those tombstones.
I was able to find a news clip from when this happened. You even get to hear Joey say how much he misses Jennifer and Adriana.
A memorial service marking the 4-year anniversary of the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana Wicks.
Man, that ain't right.
The gunfire there just before the man said what he did. It happened in Robertson County last night, where friends and family members of Wicks gathered to remember the mother and daughter and called for justice. The gunfire rang out near the home of Joey Benton. That's Jennifer's ex-boyfriend. The Wicks family's long suspected him of foul play, but Benton himself denies any involvement and their disappearance.
I miss them both, and I would do anything to know where she was at.
My anger over what happened to them will never go away because they didn't deserve it. They were too young. Their lives were just starting.
So far, police have not charged anyone in the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana Wicks.
There's one detail that I haven't told you about, but I think it could be potentially important. Several days before they went missing, Jennifer took Adriana to the emergency room.
And see, Adriana was taken to, emergency room. She was sick. She was also sick. I had just taken a medicine on Tuesday night. I had taken Medem and taken the baby medicine. When I got off work, went to the Walgreens and picked her up medicine and met her and gave it to her. The baby was sick. She'd been to the emergency room on Monday night. She couldn't go potty. That, I mean, was screaming in pain when she had to go potty. Apparently had a urinary tract infection or something going on, which Jennifer apparently found strange because Jennifer talked to my sister about when she got in from the hospital. She talked to my sister about how strange she felt that was, that Adriana would have an infection like that.
Now, a urinary tract infection in a child can be a sign of sexual abuse, but it can also be completely unrelated. But since we know that Jennifer was concerned enough about this to voice her worries to her aunt, could she have suspected someone in the home was abusing Adriana? Even if there was no abuse going on, could she have confronted someone and an argument got out of control? While I've been working on this episode, I kept looking at pictures of Adriana, and she was just so tiny and innocent. I wondered why someone would feel the need to make her disappear too. She had just turned 2 a couple months before they disappeared. Even if Jennifer was hurt in a heat-of-the-moment kind of fight, why not just say she left without Adriana? If she was being abused, and the abuser knew that Jennifer had told family about her suspicions, could that person have been worried that Adriana herself would be evidence of that abuse? It's truly terrible to think about. A few years ago, the Robertson County Sheriff's Department announced one big step in the case.
Thank you all for being here today. We'd like to make an announcement that after careful review by the District Attorney's Office, the Sheriff's Office, TBI, and other investigative offices, we're here to declare the reclassification of the Wicks, Adriana, and, being from a missing persons to a homicide. Nobody has been eliminated as a suspect in this case. We've developed some new information in the last several weeks that brings us to the conclusion that there was foul play involved, and we are pursuing that as we speak in a renewed effort between the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation, Robertson County Sheriff's Office, all the investigators, and I have the mother here, Kathy. And she'd like to say, we'd like to make a plea to, we're convinced that there are people out there that know what happened. They may be reluctant to come forward. We've established a special hotline number that's going up immediately following this press conference, 615-478-5763. And that hotline is going to be available immediately. And we hope and pray that whoever sees this will come forward, and those that have information will be willing to provide it confidentially. They can also do it through email, through tips, through our website. So So, Kathy, would you like to say something?
Thank you, Sheriff. It's been almost 10 years. I just want to say thank you, first of all, to the Sheriff's Department for never giving up on Jennifer and Adriana's case and working diligently still to bring it to a close and help our family with closure. Further than that, I'd like to ask the public, we need your help. As Sheriff Holt said, there's someone out there who does know exactly what happened to Jennifer and Adriana. And I am pleading and begging as a mom and a grandmom for whoever that person is to please search your conscience and do the right thing. Call the tip line. Get in touch with the Sheriff's Department. There is a reward offered if that helps. But most of all, I'm just hoping that someone's conscience will enable them to finally come forward and let us know what exactly happened to Jennifer and Adriana in 2004. Who's responsible, and help us bring justice. Most of all, help me find my girls and lay them to rest with respect and dignity. Thank you all for coming. I appreciate that.
All right. That concludes this press conference.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, and you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this, and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. You would think that there would have been more movement in the case in the years following that press conference, but there just hasn't been. We don't know what evidence they have that caused them to change the classification from a missing persons case to a homicide case. Kathy doesn't even know. Kathy is a private investigator, and they do still get tips and leads that they'll go track down themselves. She told me about the last one that they had come in.
As a matter of fact, just this past February, there was a rumor that my girls were in a well, an old well, owned some property, and my PI searched down property and got us on the property and stuff, and we went out there. I didn't even report it to the police. We went out there on our own, rented the equipment. I had somebody climb down in the well. We emptied the well. It was full of water. We emptied it out, went to the bottom. So that was the last thing to come in. But even still, all these years later, you get stuff like that. You know, you get a rumor or something.
Jennifer and Adriana have been missing for what will be 13 years in March. I asked Kathy what laws she would like to see changed or enacted that could help in missing persons cases. What changes she thought could have helped in their case had things been different in 2004?
See, I would love to see laws passed someday. I don't have the strength in me anymore to do it, but I would love to see laws passed that says that law enforcement has to treat every missing person's case, I don't care what the age of the person is, as a crime until it's been proven otherwise. I would love to see that. I mean, why not? You know, why not? Is it manpower? Probably is. But come on.
After making 60 episodes of this podcast, more than ever, I'm a firm believer that every missing person is important. Every missing person is someone's child. Everyone deserves to be looked for. Kathy made some really great points about this, and also about the commenting that we see online that can often take a negative tone.
I'm also an advocate for everybody's somebody. And if I had a nickel for every time I've been told Jennifer was 21, she could go anywhere she wanted to go. If I had a nickel for every time I've been told that over 13 years, I could probably go ahead and retire. And I don't see that. You know, I told my husband, I told my mom, I said, look, I'm 54. But if I don't come home from work today, tomorrow, whatever, something's wrong. I don't care what they tell you. I don't care what the police tell you. I don't care. Something's wrong. I need you to look for me. I may have had a nervous breakdown. I may be on drugs and need some help. I may be, you know, I may have had a wreck and be off the road somewhere. I may be missing. I may have been abducted. I may have been killed. You know, I mean, just look for me. And so I'm a big advocate for missing adults too, because, and I understand, and I get angry when I get online sometime and start getting into some of these boards and things and seeing or these news stories where people make comments and you start seeing people bashing the missing person. It's victim blaming. And I'm talking about maybe one that's found. You know, maybe she did have a breakdown 10 years ago. People will jump out there and start just coming down on that person, and it makes me mad because I have to sit back and look at it like, wonder if my daughter is out there somewhere and she doesn't want to be bashed like that. You know what I mean? You know, if she's out there and she's not in being held hostage somewhere, then she reads and sees stuff too. And so she would think, oh geez, if I were to even try to go home now, look what would happen to me.
One thing that I sometimes talk about is why some people get national media attention and others don't. Jennifer and Adriana's case looks like one that would get national attention because you have a missing 2-year-old involved. Well, as I told you earlier, law enforcement would not speak with me at all. I thought that I got the cold shoulder because I'm the little guy as far as media goes. But apparently, they've given the big news shows the same treatment over the years, which has prevented them from getting national coverage, despite the interest from larger media. Kathy was not shocked when I told her that they wouldn't speak with me.
It's not just you, believe me. It's any media that reaches out to them of any kind. See, we have a detective now that I had the feeling I could trust and that was genuine about wanting to solve my girl's case. You know, when I hear things like that, and believe me, I hear it a lot, it just blows my mind. And it makes me angry. And then he usually hears from me. And then, you know, because I can't help myself. I want answers from them. I want to know why. They've never, I'll tell you what, early on in our case, and when I say early on, I mean like within the first couple of years, my mom got a 48 hours producer interested in my girl's case. It was about 2 years old. And no, absolutely, absolutely no. No comment. Discourage them from doing it. Just the whole nine yards. The person who has information about a case that's 13 years old may live in Hawaii now or Australia or wherever. That person who has that, they always tell me, and I believe it, that there's a little tiny piece missing. So, okay, whoever holds that little tiny piece that's going to fit the whole puzzle together could be anywhere. Anywhere. And so why would they not want to, in the very least, ask if you have any information regarding this case? Please contact me. I don't understand that. Sure, I never have.
Even though the family believes that Jennifer is most likely gone, they have some hope that Adriana could still be alive, that maybe she was given away to someone to raise, or sold, or illegally adopted. She's so little that she wouldn't remember anything. So, not getting their faces out there nationally because the police department wouldn't cooperate with the media has been a huge frustration. Even if they're both gone, there could be someone out there who knows something, and they may not be living locally anymore. Every year, they hold an event in honor of Jennifer and Adriana. It's called the Chain of Hope. Kathy told me how this event began years ago, with a simple Facebook post that her husband made announcing that he was going to go ride his motorcycle to honor Jennifer and Adriana for the anniversary of their disappearance. They didn't quite expect so many people to show up in support.
The Chain of Hope, the motorcycle ride. My husband and I were bikers, and the way that started was just my husband on the anniversary of my girl's disappearance. And, you know, that's all that's on our mind. It's all we're thinking about. And we try to find ways to honor them and stuff. Well, he says him and his buddies going to take a motorcycle ride in their honor. He put it on Facebook and said that he was going to ride for Jennifer and Adriana tomorrow. Anybody wants to join him? And he told him where he'd be at what time, and 100 people showed up. I mean, it was just simple as that. And some people in my family got a little upset with me because all those bikers showed up, you know. We're in the Southern Bible Belt, come on. And they were just in shock. And then some were upset with me. Even my other daughter was upset a little bit. She says, I don't understand. This is not supposed to be a happy day. We're not supposed to be laughing and gathering and laughing and telling jokes and having a beer. And she says, it's supposed to be a somber day to remember Jennifer and Adriana. And I told her, I said, the whole point is that we need to find out what happened to them. I need to find them. I need to keep their name out there. I need to keep doing everything I can do. People don't like going to funerals, and they won't go to the same funeral year after year after year. They will come to have some fun. And so I totally changed it, and I've had as many as 3 and 4 bands performing and have food and just everything.
They will be having the annual Chain of Hope ride again this year for anyone who would like to attend and show their support. It will be held later this spring, but they're still in the planning process. So keep an eye on my social media because I'll be sharing the information once they have a date set in stone. If you have any information about the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana Wicks, please call the tip line that Kathy's private investigator has established at 615-573-2191 or 615-973-6634. That brings us to the end of episode 60. I would like to thank Kathy for speaking with me. She was such a pleasure to talk to. If you would like to reach me, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you go to thevanishedpodcast.com, there's also a contact form there as well. I know that last week I promised you that I'd be covering a missing man from Washington, but we had a bit of a shakeup in our schedule midweek. I had to change everything and switch to covering this story. That caused a slight delay in my release schedule, so I'd like to thank you guys for your patience. As it turns out, tomorrow is Adriana's 15th birthday, so if you have a chance, please share her picture. Remember, she could still be out there. I think that I will skip telling you guys what I have on schedule for next week so that I don't jinx myself again. Have a great week, everyone.
This is what's been difficult for me because I'm 13 years into this, almost. And what's been difficult for me is coming to grips with the fact that
They just may not be out there, period. It's a hole in your whole family. You know, I mean, there's always this, there's always just this blank, you know. Every event in your family, whether it's someone dying or a baby being born or anything, you know, strikes you even harder. So every event, whether it's happy or sad, almost as sad, you know, it brings it back full force that there's this big missing piece. And you know, and in my case, it's my daughter and my granddaughter. So I live still to this day trying to figure out another way, another place to look, another way to tell somebody about my girls, another way to make it happen. But then at the same time, because I'm that kind of person, I'm me and some of my girlfriends were warrior women. That's the kind of woman I am. And so I can't go over there in the corner and sit down and fall to pieces. I have to fight. And I have to do it for my daughter. Now I'm just her voice. I have to always be her voice. And I just have to tell myself that even when I get tired and don't feel like I want to do it anymore and just don't think I can do it anymore physically, mentally. I just have to keep myself up and say, yeah, I can and I will because I got to find my daughter and my granddaughter. It's got to. And it's just a drive or something now. It's a drive that keeps me going now, in a way. Don't get me wrong. Most of the time I want it to go away. But my reason tells me that's not happening.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.